Batter Off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 78 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Maggie. Hello, Linda.
I'm very excited because all four of us are here this week, which is not going to happen all that often. But for special occasions, we do this. And today is a special occasion, if not entirely for the reason we thought it would be. But it is still a special occasion regardless, because this is the last podcast before opening day. We are recording this on Tuesday night, March 30th. Opening day is Thursday evening, and we're very excited about it. Little did we know, though, that Francisco Lindor is still not extended yet. We expected this to be a celebratory podcast, but things are going down to the wire on this one, you guys.
It's an annoyed podcast, everyone's favorite.
Hopefully it will only be a partly annoyed podcast, but then we might go like to celebratory podcast or to really PO'd podcast.
Yeah.
This could go so many ways right now. Oof.
It dropping during this would be ideal, but I don't think that's going to happen at this point. I'm going to call it an anxiety podcast, because that's the main emotion I'm feeling right now. But as of right now, like I said, it's Tuesday evening on March 30th at about 8:30. No deal has been reached. Lindor, as everyone knows, has set opening day as his deadline. I think at this point, because things are going so close to the wire, even if it drops slightly after opening day, he just means negotiations. It may end up being that the news is announced slightly after, but regardless, he doesn't want to negotiate anymore after opening day, and he's been very clear about that. The developments since last time we talked about this, and there are quite a few, are that basically both sides have sort of upped the ante and are very publicly posturing in the media at this point. The negotiations are being carried out very publicly through the media, which is new because there had kind of not really been leaks from the Mets before this, but now it's starting to just be out there for everyone to see.
Does it count as a leak if it's Steve Cohen on Twitter?
Oh, good God.
Openly about negotiations.
I guess
I've
not.
Never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, our very
Lock
online
off,
owner,
Mr. Cohen.
Our very online owner is an extremely double-edged sword in this case. It's not great.
I just keep thinking of the last time we had a whole blow up of negotiations or trades on Twitter. It was with Wilmer Flores and Carlos Gomez, and that was just a mess. All around, so many emotions, and it was so unnecessary.
If Sandy Alderson had tweeted, "No, we did not trade Wilmer Flores," I feel like that would be on the level of what Cohen is doing now, which is hilarious and weird and not helping anything.
Seriously, no, not helping.
Not in the slightest.
The latest details on this, beyond that, just like Steve Cohen is making everything worse by being online. It's very, very transparent and hilarious how there's like a set of baseball writers who are getting the Mets side and a set of baseball writers who are getting the agent side. Certain people are tweeting, and then other people tweet immediately after. So the latest set of tweets is that the Mets were saying publicly through their chosen channels that 10 years, $325 million was their, quote, final offer. So they had initially offered Lindor something a little bit below $300 million, and then, like, Lindor and his camp had countered with, like, far over that, and the Mets said, okay, like, they brought it up to 10 years, $325 million. And they said publicly, this is their, quote, final offer. And then Lindor's camp is now saying, as of late last night, early this morning, that they won't back down from 12 years, $385 million. So that's where the two sides are standing seemingly pat right now, at least publicly. So that's still a significant gap, I'd say, at this
Don't
point.
Don't do any of this publicly. It's like a public game of chicken.
It is a public game of chicken. It's clearly each side trying to publicly
to be clear.
Not chicken parm.
No. Chicken the bad parm, kind of chicken.
Chicken parm will be the new salmon if this does go through, because the other thing, the other like news piece is that the Mets is that Steve Cohen and Francisco Lindor ate dinner together. And Steve, in all of his tweeting, said that he ate the ravioli and it wasn't very good. And Francisco Lindor got the chicken parm, whatever you want to make for that with that information. So
but was
everyone's
the chicken
calling
parm good?
Unclear.
We don't know.
Unclear.
And for those of
Italian
you that don't,
Port St. Lucie is middling.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
And for those that don't understand the salmon reference, it goes back to when Curtis Granderson signed with us. Was it the Wilpons or was it just Sandy that took Curtis Granderson out for dinner? And Curtis Granderson just got really nice salmon and he enjoyed it. So that's
I think
the
it was the Wilpons.
It was okay.
Good enough to warrant mention, which yes. I have not had a lot of salmon that I would do that with.
It's true. It's true.
And it became a meme.
Yes. So now chicken parm, if this deal goes through, chicken parm will be the new salmon, because that'll be the meal that, where they broke bread. It'll be chicken parm. but, you know, as of right now, they're still publicly pretty far apart. It seems that both sides are trying to, like, kind of publicly call the other side's bluff and get them to back down. But we'll see what happens. It's very stressful. And Steve Cohen is just out here tweeting things like,
pouring
I really hope,
the fire.
I really hope Francisco Lindor signs. It's like, whose ball, whose court is the ball in, Steve?
He's got the money.
He's got the money.
Well, that's like, up to you.
Whenever we're dealing with just, like, massive male egos, it just makes me nervous. It's just not great things have come of that general combination of like two men with egos, but you know,
whipping them out
first time for everything.
Yeah. I really hate that. I mean, obviously I hate that the whole thing is happening publicly. I don't think it's a good look for either side, but I really hate that by doing this on the Mets part, they're already like turning people against Lindor before he's even played a game. And I just hate that the takes are going to be bad, like regardless of whether this deal goes through almost, because if it doesn't, then fans are going to be mad. They're going to be like, oh, is that not enough for you? Bleh. And then if it does go through, like anytime he grounds out, fans are going to be like, oh, not worth it. And I'm just
it's
like,
it's a no-win situation.
Yeah, it's really frustrating.
Well, like Chris pointed out, our editor, Chris McShane, he said, this is a refreshing change. Like they're knocking a player coming into the door instead of on the way out of the door.
Yeah, I guess that is different.
But is it good?
No, neither's good.
No. And I said this, I tweeted this earlier today, and I'm just like, well, first of all, the continued concern about Steve Cohen's wallet on the part of fans is confounding to me and will always be. But I think that Mets fans, like, there's a significant contingent of Mets fans that, like, being miserable is their entire personality. And so they don't, like, I'm convinced they don't even want a nice thing. They don't even want this nice thing because they don't know how to act, because they have thrived on being miserable and they just want to be negative for the sake of being negative. And so they're just like, it's like overpaid. It's like, oh my God, are you serious? Like, do you like being miserable? Is that something you enjoy?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, we see like they're still crying over Kelenic. It's like, get over it. Like, yeah. You have Edwin Diaz is perfectly fine, and yet like they legit hate him and will always hate him because of Kelenic.
Which is dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, not to defend the Mets in any way on this, but like, if I had been asked a couple weeks ago to target a price for a Lindor, I think 10 years, 325 is pretty much exactly where I would have landed. And
yeah.
I'm not entirely convinced that if this that if Lindor goes into the offseason a free agent, that he's going to come out with any more than that.
No, I don't think he would personally, yeah, unless he has like an insane season, like MVP level. Like,
go for it, buddy. Get it. And Steve Cohen, get over your ego problem here and just like pay the idiot tax for yapping on Twitter about it. Like,
he's a hedge fund manager. So,
and also, like, I forget who tweeted it, but they're like, you're willing to go to $40 million a year for freaking Trevor Bauer, and oh, Cohen's out here still crying about Trevor Bauer.
I hated that, by the way.
Yes, I hated that too, because at least Sandy was smart enough to back off a little bit, saying, oh, we were naive and we thought, you know, it wouldn't be that bad or whatever Sandy said. So at least Sandy had the good sense to at least back away. Like, he still didn't look good, to be clear, because they still aggressively went after Bauer, but Sandy saw the backlash. Cohen cannot read a room, basically. And we still
unsurprising.
Trevor Bauer.
It's the ego. Yep. It's that like billionaire ability. Like, look, you can't spend $1 billion ever, but you can use it to never give a shit about what anyone thinks ever again, except for your ego.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like, increased transparency and like some fun Twitter banter with the fans and doing these Q&As and stuff, like, it's a refreshing change from the previous regime. We said this when Steve Cohen first became the new owner. I think it's good on the whole, but there's a point where it becomes too much, and we've reached that point with this Lindor stuff. Like, you just have to log off at a certain point. Like, you can make tweets after it's done.
Yeah.
Like you can take a picture of the chicken parm and then do your like shit posting after it's done and like make a meme and be like, ha ha ha, like, fine. But like, not when it's still happening. You're like, basically he's trolling the fans, and that's not good.
Yeah. And if it goes south, it's going to get ugly quickly.
Really quickly. Really quickly.
I mean, he's trying to, I feel like, have the best of both worlds in that he's trying to be a fan, like one of the online fans, and trying to fit in with that group, but he can't because he can complain, but he has control over it. The fans don't. So it's just bad right now.
Yeah. I mean, is 385 or whatever they would land on, is that, you know, the correct amount? I mean, it doesn't matter. It's the amount that he has to pay. And just,
yes.
Yeah. Like,
it's like if somebody you wait until Christmas Eve to buy your Christmas tree and you're like, what? It's $90? Like, well, Christmas Eve. Whose fault is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I just like, and like, I had someone in my mentions today posting like a screenshot of fan graphs of like comparing Mookie Betts and Francisco Lindor and being like, he's not worth more money than Mookie Betts. And I was just like, you post this information like it's relevant to me. I literally do not care what he makes in comparison to Mookie Betts. I don't care. I understand what their fan graphs pages say. Like, I know how good Mookie Betts is. He's very good. Francisco Lindor is also very good. Maybe not quite as good as Mookie Betts, but in the same star tier. I literally don't care how much money he makes. Just get it done.
Well, then you had John Heyman saying you can't pay him like 3 times DeGrom. Why not?
What? Seriously, they were about to pay Bauer more than DeGrom.
Exactly.
Well, like, DeGrom's annual value is not that far off. Like, it was a 5-year contract.
Yeah.
Versus a 10-year contract. Like,
yeah. Very different.
Should DeGrom's contract have been longer? As it turns out. But, like, in terms of comparing average annual value, they're actually really close.
Mm.
And in DeGrom terms of comparing, out, he can renegotiate if he's unhappy. He's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't remind me.
He has his opt out.
Also, he had such a good answer to when he was asked about that. The contract comparison. He's just like, yeah, that was the market at the time I signed. It's a different market now. It's just like, Jake, you're so damn diplomatic and wonderful.
Yeah. He doesn't care. So, and like,
he just likes baseball.
In terms of, speaking in terms of average annual value, if you look at where the Mets are at with their, quote, final offer and where Lindor is at, with more years, the average annual value is actually less with Lindor's offer, and it helps with the tax. I mean, this is like two collective bargaining agreements from now. So that's the other thing, because people are like, oh, the tax. It's like, who even knows what that's going to look like? How are you concerned about the Mets payroll in 2033 or whatever the hell?
I simply am not. Owner who can afford it.
I simply am not concerned about these things. Like, oh, draft picks. There's going to be a new collective bargaining agreement two times over by the time this contract is up, if this contract goes through. So I just, like, you can't base this on, like, what things are going to be a decade from now. We might all be underwater a decade from now. Like, yes, can we just let just us thinking. Live? Let us live.
Let's but Allison, how else will enjoyment. We post the dollars per war tenants in the stadium if we don't find the little places here to penny pinch?
Dollars per war fly forever.
Oh my god.
I just, like, ugh.
Like, basically, we can't ever do anything because it might be a disaster 5 years from now. Like, that's basically the argument.
Right. Which is,
there's
like,
always drama. There's always drama.
If we win a World Series like this year or next year, I guarantee you I am not going to give a single shit about 2033.
Yeah, like, just, what was the point of getting a new owner if we're not going to get, like, pay players? Like, this was
although
the
I
whole
will
reason
say,
why everybody wanted the Wilpons gone.
We would not even be having this conversation.
No.
It's true.
If Steve Cohen, like, again... Not
shut us
now. They need to, like, bust out the checkbook, boys. But it is refreshing to be talking about extending a big star instead of, looking forward to the return of Quad A Nobody from Never as our number four starter.
It's true. It's
so
true.
That's I'll call that a positive that we are here arguing. Not arguing. We all agree. About Francisco Lindor when that would not have even been a name upon our lips. Yay, just a year ago.
It is true. And the other thing about fans who are, like, concerned about, you know, the amount of money that Francisco Lindor is making for some reason, like, Mets fans are well known for their massive inferiority complex when it comes to the New York Yankees. And we now have the chance to do what the Yankees have done to us for decades now. And you are mad about that? What is wrong with you? I want that. I want to be the team that everyone else hates because they paid for a championship. I want that so badly. And we have a chance to do that now. Come on. Is that not exciting to you?
No, Allison. We can't give money to talented people. That would be wrong. I don't know.
How would you prefer we spend this money on, like, four Rick Porcellos a year? I just can't.
Yeah, because that was fun last year.
A rounding error on Cohen's taxes.
I think people are still sort of traumatized by the Wilpon era. I'm leaving room for that. I think this whole season for people to get their get to a better mental state in terms of, hey, the Wilpons were terrible in pretty much every single way, to what is hopefully a better regime. I mean, we're already seeing a lot of improvements in the analytics office, which was, I think, what, four or six people under the Wilpons, and it's now 20 under Cohen. So that's already a big expansion. So I just think we all need time as fans to kind of get the stench of the Wilpons out of our nose, the taste of them out of our mouths, and get used to the feeling of Cohen and the big bucks.
Well, yep. And like somebody he dropped like $2 billion for his friend because they got caught because of the GameStop thing. If he could just drop $2 billion to help a friend out, he can drop 375 on a baseball player.
Yeah, I think I saw Cohen would light $1 billion on fire because his buddy lost a bar bet, but won't give it to Francisco.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, that's his friend. That was his protege. So, I don't know. He's a hedge fund guy. I don't know what they think.
I just know LaGrow would actually be doing something for the money.
Yeah.
Instead of just like literally losing it in seconds.
Yeah. It's literally like he dropped $2 billion to let this guy put some scotch tape on the hole in his raft. Like, that's literally what it is. As opposed to getting to watch Francisco Lindor play glorious baseball day in and day out. Like, what? Which of these is better?
Seriously, his friend got duped by Redditors on GameStop. And you're okay with Cohen spending $2 billion on that. But $375 million is an issue to watch Francisco Lindor play baseball.
Yep.
I just want to be clear.
I mean, we were talking about this a bit before the show, and I want to bring it up on the actual show. I'm very glad that Pete Alonso came out and said, pay the man $400 million. I don't care. It's very important for the players to advocate for this stuff. The same thing happened with the DeGrom extension when that was going down to the wire. This is happening very similarly. You know, like even a day or two out, there was a lot of consternation about whether the DeGrom deal was going to get done. And Noah Syndergaard said, pay the man. And I mean, who knows how much of an impact it actually had? We'll never know that. But I think it makes an impact, at least on the public perception of the thing.
Supporting players is always a wonderful thing.
I agree. and so it's really nice that Pete Alonso came out and said, pay the man, because now it makes Cohen was already
labor force folks.
Mm-hmm.
Cohen was already going to look bad if this didn't go through before that. But now he looks bad, not only to the fans, but to his own players. And you don't want to have your relationship with your players, especially one who might be a future like cornerstone of your franchise, like Pete Alonso. You don't want that to go south so soon after you've taken the helm.
I don't know if this was like a sign or anything. You can read into it, whatever, however you want. I was doing a baseball display at work today. And I was like, I want to make sure I have current books on display. So I think it was from 2019, I think the book got published. It was called Baseball's New Wave, and it was like today's greatest stars. And it had Mike Trout on the cover. So I opened it up, and the first page, the first chapter I opened up to was Francisco Lindor.
Wow.
Hell yeah.
It's a sign. Like, who I opened up to?
It's a sign.
I took it as a good sign, but
yes,
we shall see, I guess. But that book is not on display. So, but he's still on the Indians in that book since it was published a couple of years ago. But hopefully, when the next book is written, Francisco Lindor will be in the orange and blue.
Yes, I hope.
He looks great in orange and blue.
He really does. He looks so good in the uniform. Ugh, it's awesome. And I'm so excited. Regardless of what happens with the extension, I'm still, at least in 2021, we'll get to watch him play baseball. I'm very excited for that.
Yes.
And, you know, it's very soon. Thursday's opening day. I'm very excited. Yay!
We're all excited. Oh my God. It's for baseball to start on time. It's going to be nice.
And we get to watch DeGrom pitch opening day.
But I work until 7 o'clock, so I won't be home until 7:30.
Oh no. Just like put on Howie on the radio on the
Yeah, at
on
least
the,
I won't have
car.
To hear A-Rod. I can hear Howie driving
Yes.
home.
Yeah, it's true. The ESPN booth. It's very sad that the Mets, that we don't get Gary, Keith, and Ron on opening day. But Michael and I never were going to because they're playing the Nationals. And so I actually, sadly, am happy that it's on ESPN because that is preferable to the Masson booth. As terrible as that is.
Well, I would just like to thank the Mets for having a night game opening day. The week when all of New York City's school kids are home for spring break.
Yeah.
Great job. Good planning. Thank you.
Yes.
No opening day afternoon baseball here.
No.
Well, I don't have to, you know, it's nice for people who have work.
I was going to say, I've never seen an opening day.
I used to take it as a vacation day every year, and I guess I technically should take it as a vacation day today, but. This year, but I won't.
I would have thought about it if the game was a day game, but what I am doing is I'm taking a vacation day Friday to make a 3-day weekend after opening day. So that's nice. Mm-hmm, that'll be nice.
I was going to say, because I just have a 3-day weekend anyway. Ah, but because both my libraries are closed Friday and Saturday.
Lucky.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, holidays. Because it's Easter weekend. I actually had to take off because it's not a holiday. But
the village is closed, but they forced the library open. It's like, wait, how does this work? I'm in a village, an employee, so how did that happen?
Good question.
Things are confusing.
Yeah.
The days melt into each other like putty.
Yeah. Very, very true.
Yeah, time is a flat circle. I get the day of the week wrong so often now. It's kind of absurd. But I am excited regarding particular opening day plans. Michael and I are getting Shake Shack delivered to replicate the full Mets experience. So I'm just really psyched about that. It's going to be like a whole thing. We're going to get like fancy beer and we're going to get Shake Shack, and I'm just hyped as hell. Baseball.
Yay! Baseball on the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets.
We're trying to drum up excitement before we have to talk about other bad topics.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
But I am genuinely excited. So
I am too.
There's that going for it.
Yes.
And, you know, people can actually go to games and hopefully do so safely. And, like, I can actually plan. That's still the amazing thing. Like, I can actually plan on going to a game this year, which still kind of blows my mind. Like, May 1st, when I'm fully vaxxed, like, wild horses wouldn't be able to drive me away.
May 15th will be my official. I get my first shot tomorrow, so.
Ooh. Yay! Mine will be April 27th, because I have my second shot on the 13th.
Mine, the second shot's April 17th, so whatever, 2 weeks after the 17th.
That's the same day as my mom's getting her second shot, I think.
Oh, nice.
You'll be vaccine shot twins. Yeah. Twins. Speaking of vaccines and, you know, healthcare, another very exciting thing that we want to just point out on this podcast is that a woman has been promoted to head team physician of the New York Mets.
Woo! That is so exciting.
Congratulations to, oh my gosh, I'm like opening the
Catherine.
Tweet.
Her name's Catherine. I know that.
Congratulations to Dr. Catherine McElney. McElhenney. I think it's McElhenney. McElhenney, I think. I think we're sorry that we're pronouncing this incorrectly.
Or McElhenney?
Ladies be doctoring, and we love to see it, folks.
Like, that's what it comes down to.
And in her
congratulations, Dr. Catherine.
And in her photo, like, on the, like, you know, where the Mets did the official tweet and the press release with, like, the header photo, she's wearing pearls. And I just love that so much. Yeah. It's awesome. With her white coat, ugh, fire. So we're very excited about that. So that's pretty cool. So we'll post the link to the Mets like press announcement in case y'all missed it. But we're very excited about that. That a woman has been promoted to head team doctor. That's super cool.
Stuff like this, like Cohen does good stuff like this. They're like, and then there was that other article in The Athletic saying they're like trying to build like a super pitching, like they have a secret lab like to build super pitching. So it's like he's like really invested in like doing good things, and then he also does like baffling things like not paying Francisco Lindor.
I think he's also, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, he's also kind of trying to find his footing as a baseball owner right now. Because it's one thing to be a fan, it's a whole nother ball game to be a majority owner. So
He's
trying to be both, and he's not succeeding at it, in my view. I forgot. I had another thought there, and it just went out of my head. Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's certainly a week of mixed bags, we'll say, because on the heels of this news that, you know, the Mets have hired a woman to be the head team physician, like, there's also this Athletic piece that dropped that we need to talk about. So, In the aftermath of the Jared Porter incident and the Mickey Callaway incident,
and the other guy incident whose name I forget.
Oh yeah, and the other
Ryan
guy.
Something.
Was there was yet Ryan? Another guy in the minor leagues.
Yeah, he was not a prominent. Wait a minute.
Hitting coach.
It was a hitting coach.
Yeah, he was a hitting coach in the minor leagues.
It's too many. Too many. We should not be losing track of the number.
Anyway,
Ryan Ellis is his name.
Yes, yeah. Brian Ellis. Thank you, Kellyanne. The fact that the Mets were at the center of all of these scandals, Sandy Alderson had said, you know, in his pressers and stuff, like, we're going to take a look at our vetting process and everything involved with hiring and workplace culture stuff. And so, and Steve Cohen, I remember, like, he made that tweet immediately after the Jared Porter thing, basically saying, like, or a statement basically saying, like, this would never be tolerated under my, or, like, this wouldn't be tolerated under my ownership if I knew. And so, like, Now news has broken in reporting from The Athletic that the Mets have hired a law firm called WilmerHale to conduct a review of the New York Mets, quote, workplace culture with a focus on, quote, sexual harassment, misconduct, and discrimination issues. I have mixed feelings about this. On one hand, they're like doing something about it, which I guess is more than you can say in most instances where things just go away and you hear nothing. But on the other hand,
we sit here and we say, like, do something, like put your money where your mouth is and take an action. So
yeah,
that much has been done.
They did something.
Yeah, the bare minimum has been done.
But like, is a law firm the right approach for this?
I mean, it's the right approach if what you want to do is make sure you can't get sued for sexual harassment.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that this is the thought on the Met side. I'm not saying it either. But, like, that's what I would do if my concern was being sued. I would hire a law firm. I would not hire a law firm if I was especially interested in kind of having my employees unlearn toxic masculinity. Law firm, not the first place I would look.
On the flip side of this, though, I am looking at the WilmerHale page right now to see like who their lawyers are, and it's a pretty diverse. I'm surprised at the diversity of the employees right now. The counselors, yes, lots of women, lots of people of color. So this is good. Nice, even male-female divide, it's looking like. So I'm just, like, scanning just a few pages, but it should be.
I mean, I would want to know, like, if they're involved in this sort of practicing law, like, who are they working for? Yeah, like, what actual, like, type clients are they representing?
Yeah.
And what is their goal in doing this kind of consulting work? You know,
yeah, I want to know their history here in this space. And
what
kind
of,
like,
that there's not a nonprofit doing similar things.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's what I was going to say, Maggie. Thing. Why is there not a nonprofit? Oh, God, we got pinged. What is that?
No, it's okay. It's just Tommy Hunter.
You can't freaking do this to me. Sorry, y'all. We got tagged in the Slack, and usually I don't have the Slack open while we're recording because stuff doesn't happen. But, you know, I have the Slack open right now, and when you get an all-channel ping in the news channel, you can't give me a heart attack like that.
Yeah,
anyhow,
false alarm.
False alarm, everyone. Chris! Anyhow.
I know!
I completely agree, Maggie. That was literally my first thought when I read about this, was why is a nonprofit not doing this work? Like, why have you not hired? Why have you not given a nonprofit money for this? Like, it seems like that would be the right place to go. Worth noting also that in the realm of, if I were Steve Cohen and I hired a law firm, it would be to avoid getting sued. Recall that Steve Cohen's company has indeed gotten sued in the past for this very thing. So keep that in mind.
Ugh. Chris, again! Oh.
He's trolling. What? He's being mean.
Chris, you jerk!
No, that's so rude.
Rude.
It's a salty pod, folks.
Yes.
Here we are.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I think the overall take is they're doing something, but unclear if it's the right thing. But I remain, you know, like, at least open to seeing what the results are. I'll put it that way. I want to see the results before I pass a complete judgment on this. And I want to see potentially what results Wilmer Hale has delivered to clients in the past and what form those results have taken. And if, you know, they've done this sort of work reliably in the past and, you know, delivered results. But, and we can do some research on that and maybe get back to you.
And also, Deisha pointed out when she was on the pod that at least the Mets are doing something. It's like the Indians have done nothing. The Angels clearly have done nothing. The Blue Jays haven't done anything. So the Cubs haven't done anything about Porter. So at least the Mets are at least giving off the appearance of trying, whether we said it's, you know, legit or whatever still remains to be seen. But it's at least a start compared to what the other teams are doing.
Yeah, I can't recall ever another team saying we're hiring an outside party to take a look at our workplace culture.
Yeah.
So whether it's the right exact outside party to be doing this is another debate, but I can't remember a single other team even like going that far to say we're going to have an outside party that's not MLB investigate our
workplace
culture.
Well, because MLB doesn't care.
Right, right. Yeah. And their investigations, as we know, are not...
are
not the greatest.
Speaking of MLB investigations, Allison, how long has it been since Mickey Callaway's investigation started?
It's been a while. So what was the exact day it started? But we learned in that same Athletic article. So in the same Athletic article that they talked about the Mets, because obviously Mickey Callaway is a related matter, we learned that there's nothing to learn, basically, about the Mickey Callaway investigation. I will quote a passage from the Athletic article. Major League Baseball's investigation into Callaway remains ongoing, but is not expected to be completed by opening day. The league has reached out to numerous men and women who intersected with Callaway in all three organizations where he worked. Additionally, the league has reviewed at least some of his electronic data. So, basically, there's nothing to report. They've been talking to people and looking at his texts, which we've all already seen.
I will say, handing this investigation over to the DMV sloth from Zootopia is seeming more and more like a questionable decision every day.
Priscilla.
Oh my gosh.
Considering very strongly, putting on my best Donald Trump voice, considering very strongly naming this episode... the DMV sloth from Zootopia.
Oh, Jesus. Wait, is it Flash 100-yard dash? Is that...
Yeah, Priscilla's the other sloth that he consults on the joke.
Yes, because that's how my cat got his name. Well, Joey Katz, we call him. But his real name is Flash, because when I would put him down, he would take off. So I'd always say Flash 100-yard dash.
I'm trying to find out the day that they announced... that the investigation is starting. Well, like they said that they were going to do an investigation. I mean, it was like
February. I'm like 70% sure we had this conversation last month.
We did. I mean, I know no. So the I know when
investigation.
I know exactly March. When the allegations came out, which was February. But when did they start the investigation? It's been
like right away.
Second, yeah, March.
Right away.
Hang on a second.
I think it was maybe the day after, but it was literally, like, immediately. Because they couldn't fire him. Everyone's like, okay, we'll fire him. And they're like, well, we can't do that. Because we might have to pay him.
February 2nd, it was... he was suspended.
Yes, yeah, so he was suspended February 2nd.
Second Groundhog
Almost
Day.
2 months ago. Almost two months ago.
Oh, how
still
fitting.
Has
it's
a job.
Groundhog Day. We're literally living in Groundhog Day.
Oh, still has a job, will have a job on opening day. Very cool.
And being paid.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Not going to take back his paychecks.
Nope. God forbid.
And he's supposedly not in camp right now, right? From what I'm, from what I understand,
he's not, I don't think, because he's suspended.
In theory.
Suspended with pay.
Well, the fact that they even have to, quote unquote, investigate is because Callaway's saying everything was consensual. So basically, this whole investigation is the based on the word of one man.
Yep.
And not the five women who were brave enough to come forward.
And all of, and everybody talks about corroboration, corroboration, corroboration. All of these are corroborated. And it specifically says in the piece, like, there are, like, for each story, there are contemporaneous, like, people in those women's lives who said, yes, they told me about this.
Or saw it themselves.
Right.
Or, like, what? His nickname, I don't remember, with which club. I want to say it was with the Mets. His nickname was, like, Dick Pick Mick.
It was with the Mets.
Well, just...
I'm like, are we still under the impression that there has ever been a consensual dick pic?
No.
Because I have yet to hear of one. It would be news to me.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay.
It's just a mess all around.
Salty.
Yeah.
Had to be salty.
So... Another not so great topic that we have to cover for this week
is, so as
everybody knows, known abuser Odubel Herrera was back was in Philly's camp this spring, and there was obviously, like, you know, much, you know, consternation about that, and like, there was, is he going to make the team? Is he not going to make the team? Because he was on the fringe, kind of, and we got a piece this week that was basically a redemption I'm calling it a redemption piece disguised as a labor issue, which is pretty it's just disgusting framing all around. I mean, we'll share it, not because this person deserves clicks, but because you should. It's almost like too ridiculous to believe unless you read it yourself. But it's basically the conclusion of the piece is that the collective bargaining agreement makes it so that the Phillies are in, their hands are tied, and they have to keep Odubel Herrera, because if they cut him, it wouldn't be for baseball reasons. And it's like, first of all, like, he'd be getting paid, and so they can cut him for whatever reason they want. And second of all, like, what? He actually hasn't been that good this spring. I don't know if anybody's looked at that, or if you bothered to look at that when you were researching this piece, sir. But he hasn't been that good, and he actually has been reassigned since that piece was posted.
He's not on the major league roster. How about that?
And I mean, because I will never give any major league baseball team the benefit of the doubt, I assume that he was reassigned for baseball reasons.
Yeah.
Because he was not that good. And so it's just, it's so frustrating to act like you are writing this because you care about labor issues. Like, screw that. It makes me so mad.
And he had no clue, like, his basic understanding of labor issues were completely wrong.
Were wrong. Multiple lawyers called him out on it.
Yes. So he just wanted to go to bat for Odubel Herrera for some reason.
Yep.
That's basically what it comes down to.
For the attention, most likely. He knew it would get him clicks.
Yeah, and it's like, the like, lead in this piece is just so obnoxious. According to both the law and the Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement, Odubel Herrera is a man who is free to play center field for the Phillies. There's just no way around that. Ron Howard voiceover. Apparently there was a way around that because they cut him.
I love that they did it like hours later after that piece came through. It was just like chef's kiss.
Yeah, it was really chef's kiss. It was, but it's just like, it, like, why are you spending time doing this? Why are you doing this?
Well, and also, like, if it's the same day, it was the Inquirer again. They wrote a piece on the Flyers goalie who split with his psychologist before the season, and they're saying that's the reason why he's struggling. So they were tackling both domestic violence and mental health on the exact same day in the exact wrong way to do it. Like, you're batting 1,000, Philly Inquirer.
Yeah, woof.
Like, it was just, and then they retweeted it too. Like, you didn't get flamed enough. And then, like, they retweeted the article. It's like, read a freaking room. And it's, you know, I don't want to generalize, but it's all old white men who write these articles.
Oh, always. Mm-hmm. Always. 100% of the time, it's old white dudes who want to go to bat for these guys. Like, yeah. Why?
And, like, you, this is why, you know, I think, oh man, what was it today that somebody was getting flamed for? Oh, it was about the guy who said, like, Mickey Mantle or whatever wouldn't have taken that much money. And again,
Mickey Mantle made $100,000 yeah, the whole season.
Yeah. And again, he said he was like a Hall of Fame voter. And it's like, of course, it's all these old dudes with these old antiquated opinions that, you know, are the voices, are supposedly the voices of this game. And you wonder why the game isn't appealing to people.
Here's the full tweet. I remember Mickey Mantle signing for $100,000 for the 1963 season. Francisco Lindor just turned down $200,617.28 per game from the Mets. When is enough enough? He was offered a 10-year, $325 million deal. He wants a 12-year, $385 million deal to his age 39 season. Not a good look for Mr. Smile, especially in pandemic.
Oh, yeah, I love the implied racism, too.
Oh, yeah. That was called out immediately. Just like, oh, the Mr. Smile is very coded here, and it's very obvious.
Well, yes. And RJ Anderson had the best quote retweet of that. It said, here's a Mantle quote credited to 1995 Baseball Digest story, in case you are wondering where he might stand on Lindor's contract talk. So now here comes the quote from Mickey Mantle. If I was playing with the Yankees now, or even then, if somebody said, hey, I'll give you $1 million a year to go to Cleveland, my ass would have been in Cleveland, but they didn't have that. No, I think Mickey Mantle made his thoughts pretty clear on where he would stand on the Francisco Lindor situation.
Yes.
I liked Rich Staff's reply.
I was just about to say, Rich
please,
Staff.
Please read it.
Wonderful.
Please read it.
I remember when Neanderthals walked the earth, exchanging the shiniest shells for the pointiest sticks. I just paid $5 for a milkshake. When is enough enough?
It's the best.
Where can you get a milkshake for $5 nowadays? Jeez.
Yeah, that's what right? I want to know. That's what I want to know.
What magical, mystical place is this?
But yeah, I thought that was really funny.
I love just Rich. Like, I just do.
Aside from a basic...
Rich Staff does exist. He is a real human being.
Rich Staff is real, everyone.
We have met him.
We've met him in real life.
I have photographic and video evidence, which I will not share.
Aside from, like, basic misunderstanding of how inflation works, that's also, like, basic misunderstanding of how, like, labor rights work. Like, Mickey Mantle played at a time when, like, collective bargaining was not a thing! Thank you! Like, good to know.
It's not misunderstanding. It's purposeful, willful ignorance.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's like, it's just the astonishment that people take to Twitter to, like, show their whole ass like that.
On a daily basis, too.
Yeah. You know what would make my day better?
A ratio. Just, like, a big, fat ratio right in my face.
I mean, that one's... I won't that lie, that, I think... It's getting pretty ratioed. Let me see. Hang on.
In related labor issues, so we've got, right now we've got the Mets and Francisco Lindor negotiating, and I wouldn't say, you know, the Mets made their, quote, final offer, which, like, they should pay Lindor whatever he wants, but at least they didn't insult him in the manner that the Cubs insulted Anthony Rizzo this week.
Oh my gosh.
Which was real bad. So Anthony Rizzo, of course, is like not quite on the level of Francisco Lindor as far as like how good he is at baseball, but he is still a very good baseball player, and the Cubs offered him 5 years, $70 million to extend, which is laughable for a star player. And
like your franchise player.
Your franchise player.
Homegrown hero.
That's like if the Mets had offered DeGrom 5 years, $70 million as their like opening offer. Like, been like, here you go, Jake. Like, that's hilarious. Like, are you kidding me? And the Astros did the same with Carlos Correa. What was their offer to him? Like $100 million or something? It was pretty low.
I mean, this is part of why Lindor may really not want to make it to free agency, honestly.
Yeah.
Especially because he's not the only top flight shortstop who's going to be out there. And like, I want Lindor to get the big bucks. And I think this might be his best chance. And that sucks. But also, that is stupid.
Yeah.
I hate that I believe that.
Yeah.
Isn't Seager also walking? Didn't he just say he was?
Yeah. Seager's... I mean, the Dodgers are going
to reset. Yeah, he'll go back to LA.
Yeah.
But it's Seager, it's Baez, Story, Correa.
And Story is for sure walking.
Yeah,
Story. We've already covered this.
And Lindor
are for walking.
Yeah, there's five shortstops on, if nothing else changes as of 9/27 on March 30th, 2021, there will be five shortstops on the market next year.
Five good ones, very good ones.
Really good. I mean, they're not all Francisco Lindor, obviously, but you have options.
Yeah.
I don't want options. I want Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want options. I want Francisco.
But the Mets could also use that as leverage against him.
Yeah.
Just get the check. Cut the check. Once I'm vaccinated, don't make me go down there, Steve Cohen. I will go down to Citi Field and probably shout loudly because that's all I can do.
She will do it.
We'll get some milkshakes and pour them all over the place and on people, and you know.
I fully believe that Linda will follow through with this threat. So
just I absolutely will.
But yeah, labor relations not good. But we decided that since we knew that between, like, it wasn't going to be as celebratory of an episode as we thought because the Lindor extension still hasn't been announced and there was some, like, not great other baseball stuff, we thought that we would, before we went to walk-off wins, we thought that we would finish with, like, a somewhat, you know, a short, lighthearted segment, which is
controversial.
We also have to pick our dudes for the year.
Oh, we do have to pick our dudes. Oh,
I don't know if we should. I feel like our dudes have not fared well.
I mean, Seth Lugo is now having surgery, but like before that, he was good. But I guess last year he started and that was bad for him. So whatever. But the year I picked him as my dude,
he was really good. Yeah.
But anyway. Fair.
I think I picked Stroman as my dude last year, and well,
you know, that didn't
stuff happen.
Stuff happened.
I was gonna say last year doesn't count.
Yeah, just because of stuff happening. 2020, because I remember 2019, our dudes did well.
Hmm.
I mean, Rosario was my dude, and he did okay.
He did do well in 2019.
How about we pick dudes next podcast? Even though the season will have started, but it won't be that many games. It'll only be the first series will have been done. So we can still pick dudes. Let's pick dudes next podcast. Next podcast, we'll pick dudes, everyone. It'll be the dude podcast, and we'll now have time to think about things. And we'll also know what happened with Francisco Lindor at that point, too.
Yeah, maybe we'll be in better moods.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So, but what we will do to inject some levity into the podcast is the most polarizing issue on Mets Twitter, perhaps even more than the Francisco Lindor extension somehow, is the black jersey debate. So in addition to Steve Cohen talking about on his Q&A. So Steve Cohen had a pre-recorded Q&A recently, and that's the Bauer thing we were referencing, where he said he wished he would have had Bauer, which was eh. There was also an announcement that the black jerseys will be coming back, which made half of Mets Twitter, I don't know if it's actually half. It's you know, there's a divide. I don't know exactly what percent are on what side, but it's a portion of Mets Twitter were elated by this, and a portion of Mets Twitter were infuriated by this. And, you know, it's always been a very polarizing issue. And on this podcast, we also happen to be exactly 50-50 divided on this issue. There are two hosts who are pro-black jersey and two hosts who are anti-black jersey. So we figured that we would have a short little debate in which each side, you know, each person gets like a minute or so to state their piece, and then the other side will go, and then we'll go back, and then we'll go back to the other side, and then we'll have a little bit of a wrap-up. So I will, as a member of the anti-black jersey side, I will allow the pro-black jersey side to go first. So Kellyanne, state your case in favor of the black jerseys.
Oh, well, I get to go first. How lovely. Okay. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know I'm obsessed with the black jerseys, and I think they're fantastic. To me, they look so sharp. They're so crisp. I'm imagining Jacob deGrom in one right now, and he's just going to be amazing. Well, he's going to have to wear it on days that they do wear it. I don't know if he'll choose it that day for his own starts, but he's going to have to be wearing it at some point. Anyway, there have just been so many great moments and hilarious moments in the past with the black jerseys, like the 2006 NL East clincher. In 2000, they won the clinchers of both the NLDS and the NLCS. And there was the hilarious one with Robin Ventura poking fun at Mike Piazza by running around on the wet tarp during a rain delay.
Ventura against me, rude.
Oh, please. Oh, I'm using everyone against you, Linda, please. And the other reason I really am excited about this is because it's gotten great player support. Walker's been positive about it. Stroman is super excited about it. And even said, I think it was today on Twitter, that he wants to get a DeGrom black jersey signed from him. And the other big proponent of it is, of course, Pete Alonso. So you have player support. I love it. Most of the fans love it. I would like to say we're going to do a poll on this later on. Black jerseys are awesome. Let's go.
All right. Excellent. Linda Surovich, represent the anti-black jersey side. Give your case. Go.
Okay. Well, I disagree with basically everything Kelly has just said. to me, the black jersey looks bland. You can barely see that it says Mets on it. It's not their color. Like, any team can wear black. I want to look at a jersey and be like, that's my team. That's the Mets. I'm rocking their colors, and I look good doing it. Like, black, any schmo on the street can wear. Like, you know, the Nets wear black. Like, it's just the blue and orange are the city's colors. The blue jersey is by far superior to the black jersey.
Yes, girl. Preach!
Which Flores wore on the walk-off. I'll bring out Wilmer if you bring out Ventura.
Fine. I actually have the Flores blue jersey, so
see?
I can't really talk.
See?
Excuse me, says the person with the black Ventura. Was it jersey or jersey? It was jersey, I think.
First of all, it was a gift. Second of all, that was the style of the time. You literally couldn't find any other jerseys anywhere else.
That was a gift from a person I'm disowning from my life.
But yeah, they're just not the colors. Like, I want, when I walk into the stadium or like when somebody sees me on the street, I want them to know I'm a Mets fan, not like a double take. Like, huh? Who is that? What jersey are you wearing? No. Like I said, they're not even like, they're just blah. I don't care. They're just nostalgia for nostalgia's sake at this point. It's the racing stripes, at least they won in those. They won nothing in these.
That's so untrue. I just listed all of the things they won.
Not
in
a World Series, though. Not a World Series, but
no, you know. They didn't win a World Series in any of these uniforms since 1986. Racing stripes. That's the only one. You can't make that argument about the pinstripes. You can't make the argument about the blue jerseys or the white ones.
Well, hey,
you got they brought the back the racing stripes.
Matt Harvey wore the blue jersey at the first ever playoff game at Citi Field. So they are historic.
they're a collector's item now.
They are.
Okay.
All right. We'll go back to the pro black jersey side for a rebuttal. Maggie Wiggin, make your case.
Okay. Well, all of the jerseys that have been rattled off is part of my argument, which is that I love all of the jerseys. More jerseys. Don't get me wrong. I feel like it's important for teams to have, you know, kind of a core collection of really like classic, memorable jerseys. The Mets pinstripes are fantastic. The road grays, I die for. But like, I just love a whole mess of jerseys. And I really like what they're doing with this, where they're giving them a little redesign. I'm interested to see what that will look like. I don't imagine like big changes, but like little design tweaks that may resolve some of Linda's concerns. But, but they're bringing it back for a handful of games. And I think that's awesome because it's more variation in the uniform collection. As previously mentioned, I love all of the unicorns.
I too love all of the unicorns.
Unicorns, I
Can
have
you
no
tell
issues
I have a four-year-old daughter?
Who doesn't
I
love
do.
Unicorns?
I have no issues with unicorns.
We need Mets colored unicorns.
But the black jerseys are one more addition to a really fantastic, like, you know, the orange Los Mets jerseys, loved them, would want
one. I was actually going to say that's like the one jersey I did not like. But that was also partly because every time they wore them, someone seemed to get hurt.
Yes, those were definitely the first jerseys. Don't get me wrong. But like, are they my favorite jersey? No. Do I want to watch them a couple times a year? Oh, hell yes. That's great. I love, like, God, those absolutely hideous St. Patrick's Day jerseys they break out sometimes.
Oh, my God.
Love it. For one day a year. That's how it goes. But, like, black jerseys for 5-6 games I think would be amazing. And, like, yeah, the fans love it because it has all this tie to those are millennial jerseys. That is just, you know, that is the age bracket right there. You know, with Piazza, they are a Piazza jersey. That's hard to break away. But then also, like, my last thing is I sometimes just want to wear a black shirt, but I also want it to be Mets. I'd be very happy if I could do that more easily, because sometimes I like to wear black. I have been a goth. I have been a restaurant hostess. Black comes naturally to me. I am pro-black clothing in general. So
As a former emo kid,
yes,
I will concede on that point. But but for me, black is for band t-shirts.
Yeah, I was just thinking, someone, Michael, gave us both black Mets Harry Potter shirts.
It's true, he did. I'll have to have a discussion with him about that. Anyway,
sitting in the sun with them, it's just so hot.
It
you
is hot.
Just die.
I'll give my short anti-black jersey take, which is, so because Linda said most of what I would say, which is just that I really don't like them. My main issue, I realize, but in addition, I have two main issues with the black jerseys. Linda articulated one of them already, which is that they just, to me, it doesn't scream Mets enough. It's just, they're just not Mets. Like, black is not a Mets color. It's fine as an accent color, but it should not be the main color of the shirt because black is not a Mets color. So that's my main issue with it. But my secondary issue with it, which I think is what contributes to why I don't like them just, like, aesthetically, even removing the, like, are they Metsy aspect from it, is that I don't think that the blue pops enough against the black, and I think it makes them look bland, which is when Linda said bland, like, that's what I think of, is, like, I don't think the blue pops against the black. On the blue alternates, which are my favorite, in addition to Linda's favorite, they're my favorite as well. The orange and the blue are such contrasting colors, and they pop so well against each other, which is why, like, other teams that wear black, like the Orioles, for example, I'll bring up the Orioles, so y'all know me, I'm an Orioles fan, too. I'm an AL, they are my AL team. They are just black and orange. They are not, there's no blue involved. So those contrasting colors work really well. But with the Mets, it's sort of like, it's like a royal, but like a dark royal, and that is not enough contrasting with the black to make it pop. And so that's why aesthetically I don't like them. But I will say that what Maggie said about how it's only a few games a year, like that's like, if it gets people to be excited, then whatever, I can deal with it. I just really hope it's not a slippery slope to bring them back into the regular rotation, because I don't like them.
Well, and also the whole thing too, like, Cohen did the announcement as a huge distraction. Like, yes. The announcement was basically like, hey, look over there.
Look over there. Black jerseys. Get everyone all nostalgic and excited.
It worked really well.
Based on the timeline of Twitter when this happened, everyone was super psyched. Which,
CPR. That's all it was.
It really was. It was gimmicky. Like, I am not going to force my, this is just a fun, friendly debate. I don't actually care. Like, people can like the black jerseys and, like, other people can wear them if they want. I'm not going to, but others can, you know? It's like, people can like whatever they want. But that was gimmicky to me, that he was just like, the negotiations aren't done yet, but black jerseys, don't you love me? It's like, oh, God, come on, man.
Yeah, it was very transparent.
Also, he slipped the Bauer stuff after that, too.
Yeah, like, right after. And I mean, like, we noticed, but like most people, like, that's not what was being tweeted about in the aftermath of that Q&A at all.
Nope.
And that was his intent, I think. But yeah, it's really funny to me. It's just really funny to me how this jersey is such a polarizing thing. It's hilarious. It's like people, there's almost no middle ground on it. People either really like them or they really hate them.
But this is one of the polarizing fun things about the Mets, I'd like to say, rather than polarizing.
Yeah, there's worse things to be polarizing.
I would much rather debate about things like this that don't matter, actually matter in the grand scheme of things, than
Was like, should we clap for Jose Reyes?
Yes. Like,
no.
I'm glad to have that sort of debate behind me temporarily, probably.
Talk about a negative association with the black jerseys, by the way.
Yeah.
There's one. Fair enough.
Plenty of negative associations with the other jerseys too.
There's negative
anecdotal evidence, please.
It's funny because it's weird. I have like such a a conflict in my heart. I desperately want to feel the way that Maggie does about uniforms, because I think that is like in the right spirit. Like, every uniform's a good uniform. Have more uniforms. But my actual like hot take, and I concede this is a hot take, is that like, I love the blues so much that if it were up to me, they would wear them exclusively only and never wear the whites and never wear
the blue is very sharp.
I love
and not just because it is the absolute best tone for my coloring, like, but that that helps.
I just like, my hot take is that I do not care for road grays in general, and that's just not a Mets exclusive take. I do not care for road grays. I think they look like dirty laundry, and I don't like how they look, and I would much rather teams wear their colored alternates at all times. Like, I would prefer the Mets wear the blues both home and away at all times, and I would prefer like the Nationals wear the red, you know, and the Braves wear the navy. Like, I would rather teams wear their colored alternates than road grays. I do not like road grays.
Here's my hotter take beyond liking the road grays is several years ago they had a road game on Mother's Day, and the replica jersey they were selling was, you know, because it's women's like replica, you know, weird jerseys, they only offered it in Jacob deGrom, and I was kind of annoyed by the idea that I even liked a Mother's Day pink jersey. It was like the road gray and then with like kind of a baby pink for all of the text and stuff. Huh. And I waited too long and it sold out I like debated with myself for like 2 weeks about this thing, and it was gone. And it was also, it was kind of before DeGrom became like this force in all of our lives. But like, I still think about that Mother's Day road gray jersey. Like, that is the jersey that got away, man.
Lives rent free in your head.
I want that one back. That's the one I would take back if I could.
I have had a Francisco Lindor blue women's jersey in my cart on MLB.com for 3 freaking weeks. Like, please, I am begging you. I want nothing more than to buy it. I want to give you my money.
Well, and that's the other thing. The Mets colors mean something. They're the colors of the city. They're the blue from the Dodgers and the orange from the Giants. And it's just, it's their history. Like, the colors are an integral part of who they are as an organization. So it's just, black means nothing. It literally means nothing except for a gimmick to make money on more jerseys.
Well, you can make that argument for the white jerseys too.
But I will. That's their jersey.
That's my hot take. I'm saying,
like, the snow.
My hot take is that I don't,
man, just how it is.
Yeah, Maggie and I are on the opposite end of the spectrum. Man. Maggie and I are on the, I'm like a jersey prude, I guess is like the way to put, I don't know what the word is. I'm jersey monogamous. I'm in an exclusive, a very exclusive relationship with the blue jersey. Very exclusive relationship. I have a David Wright pinstripes jersey. I prefer that to the pure snow whites, but
my other ones are pinstripe. I need a blue, and like you, a Lindor would, you know, go a long way. My jerseys are blue. My jerseys are blue. But my jerseys, I have Pete, I have Jake, and I have Dave, and they're all the pinstripe.
It will almost complete the set in a way, although like I'll have two blues at that point, but I have a David Wright pinstripe in youth size. I have a DeGrom. I have a DeGrom authentic, so it's like it's a unisex / men's jersey. It's because it's an authentic one. That's a blue one, and then I'm gonna get the Lindor women's jersey. So I'm like literally three types of youth, men's and women's. Complete the set.
Hit the trifecta.
Yeah, two of them will be blue. One will be pinstripe.
The only jersey I can really say that I don't like is the Las Vegas jersey. It was too bright for me.
If they toned down the neon about like two notches, I would really love it. It's just hard to look at on TV, but I actually think I would like it more in real life, like at a game, at an actual game.
One of the things that I don't break out very often is the All-Star BP jersey from the year that the Mets hosted, which for the NL team was orange. And it is very nice. It's got all kinds of nice detailing. I will try to remember to wear it soon. It's a Harvey jersey. It's very moment in time, but I think you guys will like this one. It has a nice texture to it.
I would like that. I love the blues. Also, orange with blue accents is fine by me because, again, that's primary Mets colors.
That was the Players Weekend one.
When they played
in the Little League game, they wore the blue and orange jerseys.
I liked those. Yeah, I liked those a lot. I'm just pro, like, colored alternates, basically. That's, like, my jersey take. I wish all teams would wear their... I just think, again, like, for me, the aesthetic of jerseys and when I really like them is when the colors really pop, the contrasting colors of the team's colors. And so, like, that comes out the most in the alternates. Like, I remember, was it the 2020 playoffs, the 2020 wild card round, or was it 2019? Time is a flat circle, but I remember that the Rays were playing the Oakland A's and they were both wearing their colored alternates during the playoffs, and it was like the Rays like navy and baby blue and then the Oakland A's green alternates with the yellow, and I was like, this is like aesthetically my ideal baseball game right now. Like, I that is what I would like for every baseball game is for both teams to be wearing their colored alternates. Obviously, you can't have that all the time because there are a lot of red teams, and sometimes the red teams play each other, so yeah. That would be difficult. But in those cases, you just choose one of them to wear the red alternates, and the other team can wear their whites or their road grays or whatever. But I wish the colored alternates were more the primary rather than the alternate. That's my take, but I know that that's a minority take among baseball fans, probably. But I just
We're gonna find out.
I have a feeling that anti-black jersey is probably a minority view in this cohort. In this cohort, like we've been mentioning, like I totally concede that they are millennial jerseys. They definitely are because it's the teams we grew up with. It's nostalgic. I get it. So I think that on Twitter we're probably gonna lose because it's mostly millennials and younger. So we'll see, but. We're a strong but mighty minority.
We will not be silent. There are dozens of us.
And we will not be silenced. Anyway, so that was fun. I wanted to, you know, end the show on a fun note, even with walk-off wins coming. I figured I would inject some levity, so that was fun. We will put up a poll, like Kellyanne said, so you guys can participate and let us know if you're pro or anti-black jersey. And we will include a neutral option, because I want to see if there are people who don't actually have a take.
As a survey designer by trade... I want everybody to have to choose.
You
want to
have to choose a side. That's fair.
They have to make a choice.
Forcing them to choose sides. That's fine.
I think it's a binary question. Damn it.
Yeah. It's a binary question.
In this case, yes, it is.
All right. Cool. We will end the show though with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So I have a two-parter. One is that opening day is on Thursday, and I think we're all happy about that. That's one of my walk-off wins. The other one is job-related. I just had a fairly big event at my library called NJ Makers Day. It is a science, technology, engineering, and mathematics-focused event for children. And I pretty much planned activities for birth through fifth grade. On my own, and I had a really good response to it. So I was very happy about that. And then I passed out on the weekend because it took place last week, like on Friday and Saturday. And I was just like, okay, now I get to nap. I can sleep soundly. So the good feedback I got from that, though, made me really, really excited and really happy. And that's my walk-off win.
That's great. Congratulations on a successful Maker's Day. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win for the week is that we discovered a little New York City gem. We are, as I've mentioned before, and is going to be certainly a recurring theme of my podcasting life this year, is, you know, we got a car recently. So all of a sudden, things that once would take us like 45 minutes to get to on public transportation take, as it turns out, 15 minutes to get from Northern Manhattan to Randall's Island, which is delightful. And ooh. I mean, in addition to being really easy to get to, it's basically at like, and there is actually public transportation that goes there, and it's not supposed to be too bad, but it's at like the kind of the middle of the Triborough Bridge, like the center of the three boroughs of the bridge. You start on the bridge and then you don't drive over to the next borough. You just go down onto the island, and it's fabulous. And so there's tons and tons of like sports fields there and lots of various kids using them. And there's also just this really nice playground, and it's right next to the playground is an urban garden, like a really big one. And I'm really excited to like get the kids signed up to do some digging, get dirty, but like, it's so easy to get to. And it's also like, we went on Saturday. We went a couple of times. Most recently we went on Saturday when it was quite warm out. But the nice breeze coming in off the water is just the loveliest thing. And as a like personal bonus for our family, we are all huge rail fans. I mean, not as huge as our son, who is like the biggest rail fan on the planet, but you know, it's infectious. We're all kind of into it now. It goes right underneath, also, that runs parallel to the Triborough, the best named bridge in the world, which is the Hellgate Bridge. and it is used it is used by CSX and Amtrak trains to take them in and out of a of like a maintenance facility. So in the middle of playing, we're like, oh, wait, there's an Acela train. And it goes. And like, oh, look, there go the CSX trains. And it's like, it's just a wonderful little cherry on top of the lovely playground, lovely park, Thunday. It was, it's a great place. And I mean, if you're anywhere in like the general kind of Manhattan, northish Brooklyn, or westish Queens area, it is like stupid easy to get to, or the Bronx for that matter. Like it's really, really accessible, and not terribly inaccessible through public transportation, but it's beautiful and it's public facilities. And I am always standing the New York City Parks and Rec folks for just doing an amazing job maintaining the city's green spaces. And this one is awesome. So yeah, Randall's Island, hashtag who knew.
Something that I drive past all the time on the way to City Field and then never actually know. So
I mean, City Field is definitely better if I have to choose one.
It's good to know, because we always, because you know, to get to City Field from Jersey, you have to drive over the Triborough Bridge, and so I'm always like, huh, Randall's Island. I always see the sign, never been there, but now I know. The more you
field trip,
field trip, field trip.
I can tell you where the bathrooms are, so.
Yes, that is vital information wherever you're going, is to know the bathrooms ahead of time. Actually, when I was, you know, in Europe, they have a very different culture about public bathrooms than they do in America, which is that they are, like, hard to find, and sometimes you have to, like, pay for them. And oh, so, Jesus. And oh. So when I was in Italy, like, there was this girl who was on my trip with me who had a very small bladder. We'll just put it that way. She had to use the restroom a lot. Aww. And so she, by the end of the trip, she had created an entire map of Rome and where the free public toilets were.
Aww.
And it was a very useful tool for all of us.
I was going to say, that's extremely useful.
You could mark
and
that.
Smart.
I know, yeah. Right? Yeah. I keep telling her she should, like, make a brochure or something. But, anyway, Linda Surovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I kind of have two.
Do it.
The first one is my sister got her vaccine today. So almost my whole family at least has their first shot right now, which is a big relief. And I was texting her while she was there, and because she does not like needles at all, and she was kind of nervous, so I was just texting her like Mets gifts. I was like, here's my Piazza, and she's like, thanks, this is really helping. So the Mets helped her get through her vaccine, basically. But seriously, again, I have to reiterate, it's not a big deal. Like, as someone who hates needles, both of us were totally fine, and if we could do it, believe me, anybody could do it. So just a little PSA. And then my second one was I finally went out to eat on Saturday.
Yay!
It was the first time, I can't even remember the last time I went out to eat. And it was just lovely. It was a lovely day out. And it just felt good to have plans again and to get out of the house and eat good food and see somebody face to face. And, you know, it's the little things that we've, you know, that I've missed. And so it was just a lovely, lovely time. So it's slowly but surely we're getting there. But I think like that, just like, it's like, okay, that kind of sustained me. Like, we're close to the finish line. Like, we can get there. And knowing, like, so many people are getting vaccinated, like, so many people I know now are getting vaccinated, it's like, it's just this huge weight off your shoulders. And, yeah, just one you didn't even realize you were carrying for so long. Like,
mm-hmm.
When she was texting me, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad you're finally vaccinated, or at least, you know, partially vaccinated. Like, I felt relief. I don't know if she did, but I did. So so those are my two walk-off wins. Just, you know, hopefully the end is in sight, or at least hope is on the horizon at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's happy. Congrats to Linda's sister on getting the jab.
Yeah, and she survived.
yes, that's the most important thing. My walk-off limb for this week is that my cousin and his wife had a baby shower over the weekend.
A virtual one,
and that was very fun. Got to play some games with my family, you know, guess the height of the baby, guess the weight of the baby, the length, I guess, of the baby. I say height, but the baby is laying down.
They're very floppy,
so you guess the length, you don't guess the height. You know, all the typical baby shower stuff, all on Zoom, but, like, it was just nice to, like, get to see some of my family members, my more extended family members, even virtually, that I haven't seen in, like, a really long time because of the pandemic. So, yeah, that was really lovely. And I guess I'll throw in a second walk-off win, too, since it seems to be a theme of, like, having two. I found out today that I am vaccine eligible as of today. Ooh! So I don't have an appointment yet. You know, like, that's a whole different hurdle to climb. Like, who knows? Because obviously there's a huge gap between, like, being eligible and actually being able to get an appointment, you know, especially DC has been not so great with its rollout. And so it's been challenging. Yeah, I didn't expect this at all. I kind of, you know, I expected to be, like, the last person in the world to be eligible, and rightfully so, because, like, I work from home, you know, it's fine, I'm young, I don't have any comorbidities or anything like that, but it was nice because the NIH, I think, so, like, it was almost sort of a race between my workplace and, you know, the community to see, like, where I could get vaccinated first. Like, basically, who reached their final group of, like, everybody else first? Would it be DC or would it be NIH? And NIH, I think, was starting to realize that they were not going to get enough doses to vaccinate all of their staff. They have enough doses to vaccinate the essential staff that are there on campus every day, like the clinical staff, the folks in the labs that are doing research, things like that. But the teleworking staff, like, I think that they were realizing that the pace at which they were getting doses was just not going to be enough to vaccinate the teleworking staff. And so they basically said, you know, you're all NIH employees, you're public health workers, you're going to be CDC phase 1C eligible. Like, they just gave us, like, a designation, basically. And, like, I joked to my colleagues that I felt like I was getting, like, a permission slip from my mom to go on a field trip, because they literally sent us all, like, little letters that have, like, the HHS, like, US government stamp on them, that basically, oh, like, letterhead, God, and everything, that just basically said, like, this person's an NIH employee and therefore they're CDC phase 1C public healthcare worker eligible. And I was like, I feel like I'm getting, like, a vaccine permission slip from my mom. But anyway, like, that's really nice to know. So I was already pre-registered in DC, and I pre-registered in Maryland as well, because that's where I work. And so now it's a race between DC and Maryland. I assume Maryland's gonna win, but we'll see if I can get an appointment. I don't know. I'm gonna try. So yeah, that's my walk-off win, my cousin's baby shower, and then I'm vaccine eligible. Who knows when I'll actually get the shot in my arm, but I'm excited to at least be able to seek out an appointment. So that's my walk-off win for this week.
Excellent.
Awesome. In the meantime, while you're waiting for baseball to start, which is so soon now, you don't have much longer to wait. You can go to amazingavenue.com. We have so much opening week content for you all. Like, it's just, we're pumping out content like crazy. You know, we're pumping out content like crazy when Chris changes the site layout so that there's, like, five articles at the top instead of just two. So we've got so much. We've got positional previews for each of the types of positions, like infield, outfield, bullpen, starting rotation, etc. I've got like a strength of schedule piece dropping tomorrow. We've still got a couple player season previews that either just dropped or still dropping. We've got NL East matchups, like NL East previews of all of our division rivals. There's so much content coming out for you all in the next couple of days. I just posted the King of Spring Training final poll, so you should go in there and vote for your chosen King of Spring Training for 2021. Yeah, go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of that fantastic content, and once the season begins, we'll have game recaps every night for you all, like we do every year. So very excited to start the regular season content again. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own, and you can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cervich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
And you, Kellyanne?
At LRBELLARE BEE.
So follow the show on Twitter, follow each of us on Twitter. You should definitely choose now, if you haven't already, to follow us on Twitter, because we just dropped a new logo. Thanks to our lovely graphic designer, Kellyanne Healy, designed a new logo for us, and it's beautiful, and we just debuted it on Twitter, and it will be, you know, on the site and everything when this episode goes up. So we're very excited about that new logo. So you should check that out. But yeah, please subscribe to the podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, on whatever podcast app of choice. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Happy opening day, y'all.
Woo!
Let's go Mets!
Let's go Mets!